you very much for being here. Do you hear me? It's like, is it working? Okay. So my name is Guido. I'm going to present Ganati, which is an open source solution we developed at Google for internal systems in order to provide highly available virtualized environments. The content of the talk will go from like the design goals we used for Ganati. We'll have an overview about how to use Ganati and how to administer a Ganati cluster. We'll go into the details of Ganati failover and the disk usage patterns. And then we'll see how we use Ganati at Google. In the end, we'll have a Ganati roadmap about what the future developments for the project are. And then stick with me for a live demo in which we can see how it breaks, since I have brought the latest version, which is beta 2, released 2 days ago on those three laptops, and we can see if it works. So, normally, if you want to have high availability on some platform, you need to have one application, and then what you do is you put your application on two systems. You have some kind of shared storage between the two systems, and then you have some kind of perhaps ARPBit or some other tool to monitor the availability of the two systems, and then you fail over their application, possibly changing the IPs or something between system one and system two when system one fails. This works, and it's wonderful for one application. When you start having many, like if you want to have 400 applications, then you would need like 800 servers. That's a bit too much. So what you start to do is thinking about virtualization. And with virtualization, you can consolidate your server power and use only one server to run more than one virtual machine, which can eventually run different kind of applications, which don't talk to each other, don't like to be in the same system. We want to have separation for security among them and things like that. So the problem you have with virtualization is that it's all fine, except that after you've done this, you're kind of, I have consolidated my system one and system two into only one system. Now if that hardware fails, I have lost both, and I have lost my high availability. So when we virtualize, we need to have something more in order to provide high availability. And here is the idea of Ganati. What we do is we have a cluster of physical systems, and on top of them we run Xen. We basically choose Xen because it was the fastest platform available at the time, which was also open source. And after we run Xen on the systems, we can then start thinking about, okay, let's make these machines highly available. And we want to do that outside of the machine. So without thinking of what application is inside, what kind of data, how do we want to keep the data coherent or something like that. So we want something that works whatever you put in the virtual machine. So here is the idea of Ganati. Why we want it? We want to increase availability. We want in general, to have like a consolidated platform that can provide us with enough power to run our systems. But on the other hand, we want to leverage on virtualization to use less hardware, to have more standard platforms, to be able to substitute hardware on the fly without shutting down machines. So once you have a virtualized environment, you can just say, okay, let's migrate all the machines outside of this node. And after we've done that, we can just take away the node, replace it, repair it, do whatever we want to do with it, and then move the machines back, or move the machines on a new node which is more powerful, or whatever we need. So we are more flexible, we are transparent from the point of view of the user. The user just sees his normal system as he was used to, but he has a system which is more reliable. What we didn't want was, we didn't want to have some centralized storage, because that would leave us like either buying some Sun or some kind of expensive storage, or on the other hand, we couldn't use our system in a reliable way. If we just put all our storage in one server, then that server goes down, we've lost all the machines, which we don't want. So what we're doing is we're putting some storage on every node, and then we're using that storage in order to provide computing power for the cluster. We want to be able to support different kind of host systems, not just Linux, not just one version of Linux. In general, we might have customers who want to run different OSs or things like that. And we want a solution that basically scales. And we didn't want to do it all at the same time, because that would require too long for the team we were. And also, it would mean that production was slower. So what we did was we built a solution iteratively, building some small blocks and then expanding from that. What we have open sourced in August is release 1.2. We've been deploying and using inside Google release 1.0 and 1.1, and we're about to deploy release 1.2 as soon as we declare it stable. So, and we already have a roadmap for 1.3 and the future developments. So, what's Ganeti basically? Ganeti takes you away from the I have one box with Xen and I have to manage it, and brings you to the cluster level. Now you have 5, 6, 20 boxes with their hardware and with Xen installed, and you can manage them simply from only one machine. So you can say, please install a machine on node 3, and please remove all machines from node 4, and things like that. So that's what basically is Ganeti. It's based on the Xen virtualization software, and it's something that lets you use it fully in a cluster environment. In general, we can use it to manage, like, as I said, we're using it in production with 20 nodes. You can use it probably with some more nodes, definitely with less nodes if you want, and you can manage easily hundreds of instances. Sorry. So, Ganeti is implemented in Python. It uses Xen for virtualization, but we're not dependent on Xen. We actually have a layer on top of the hypervisor, and we plan to port it to different virtualization technologies as time goes by. I'll talk about this later. We use LVM for disks. We use DRBD in order to provide remote RAID 1. So basically what you have is on one machine, you have one disk which is in real time mirrored to another machine, and that's how we provide high availability. And for some things, we have to use Linux software RAID 2. I'll explain how. For remote procedure calling between nodes, we have a twisted Python daemon, and we use SSH for some other commands, which means that we basically screw up all the node config when we go inside it. I'll show about it later. Let's see about the Ganeti terminology I'm going to use. When I'm talking about the cluster, I will talk about this set of machines which act as a single Ganeti cluster. For example, these ones. A single node is one of those machines. This laptop is acting as a node. There is, at any time, one master node in the cluster. This is the node to which you connect to and to which you give commands. It's not a special node in the sense that if it fails, you can just say, make another node master, and you're fine. But at any time, you cannot connect to a random node and just issue command to it for simplicity. What happens is that the master node also holds one more IP address, which is the IP address for the cluster. So it's easy for you to connect to the cluster and do operations on it, even if you don't know which node is the master, or if the master has failed and you failed it over, you can still SSH to your cluster name, and you're connected to the cluster. We're talking about instances. And instances are basically the virtual instances we're using. So every virtual machine, you can call that virtual machine, you can call that domain in Xen terminology. There are a lot of terminologies for that. We decided to use instance. A pool, I'm not going to use this in this talk much. Anyway, we call a pool a set of Ganeti clusters which share the same network. It's useful if you want to migrate machines between clusters or things like that, which are not directly supported in Ganeti, but sometimes might be needed. And we have this meta-cluster terminology, which refers to anything that refers to more than one cluster. So if you have three clusters spread around the world, you can have some meta-cluster management tool or something like that. So how does Granity work? We've seen the small picture. Let's enlarge it a bit. What we have is a virtual system that sees one disk and one swap space, and it works on top of a physical node. What its real disk is, it's actually arrayed between some disks on the node on which the system resides and some disks which instead reside on a remote system. So whenever you want to do a failover, what you do is basically you switch down the system on system one and you bring it up on system two. You can also do a live failover in certain systems as Xen. We're not supporting it yet for some reasons I'm going to explain, but we plan to support it soon. So here are the Granity commands. In general, it's like a very simple set of commands. They all come with their man pages. They all come with interactive help. So it's really, really easy to use it for a system administrator. The first command basically is GNT cluster, which is down there. And it lets you set up the cluster and say, look, this node, this machine is actually now a Granity cluster. Then what you can do is add more nodes using the GNT node commands and have information about the nodes you have and so on. GNT cluster also lets you do things like execute a command on all the nodes or interrogate the whole cluster status or things like that, or do a master failover. Know which node is the master. If you connect it to a node and you say, oh, whatever, I need the master and I don't know where it is, so tell me which the master is. Then you have GNT instance. GNT instance lets you add or remove instances, lets you fail over instances, change the node which hosts the secondary drive, and in general deal with a whole lot of instance parameters. GNT OS. So how do we deal with operating systems we install? What we choose to do is we provide an API which you have to implement in order to install an operating system under Granity. So what happens is that Granity creates the block devices for you and then calls a script called the OS create script. And the OS create script is going to install its operating system inside this block device, which we don't know how it is installed, or it can be different systems, which maybe one uses Debian installer, another one could use Phi full automated installators, or other systems you can conceive to install your systems. So what does GNT OS do then? It lets you basically diagnose the OS status. What you have to do is provide Granity these scripts in a known location. GNT OS lets you investigate on all the nodes of the cluster which operating systems are provided. What is their status? If they're broken for some reason, they don't provide all the script they need or something like that, GNT OS tells you. We already talked about GNT cluster, and in the end, there is GNT backup. GNT backup basically lets you export your instances to a directory which contains some small ini file configuration for the instance and some data dump, which is again provided using the GNT OS script. This way, we don't have to know what the format of the partition is or something like that. If an operating system has a different format, it just needs to know how to treat the data on its partition to dump them to disk. And then GNT backup lets you also import them back to a Granity cluster. This is also useful if you want to move machines between clusters. You can just shut the machine down or just export that, then copy it and re-import it. You can even do it live because GNT backup is going to take a snapshot of your LVM device, copy the data, and then destroy the snapshot while the machine is running. But it can also switch down the machines if you want to be sure that your data is in a coherent state when you take a dump. So how do we use this thing? We call GNT cluster on a newly installed node. The node needs to be installed with XAN and DRBD and LVM and another few things. We need some Python dependencies. But basically, if you have a Debian system, it's really, really easy. If you have something Debian-like too, we don't have, for now, instructions for Red Hat or other platforms, but it should be basically as easy, especially if they already provide the packages you need for dependencies, basically. So you init your cluster. You give it a name. The name must be in DNS and must be associated to some IP address. You could give the same name of your node, but then you would lose some abilities, like you basically would lose the ability to fail it over or things like that. So you don't want to do that unless you're doing a one-node cluster for some reason. And even in that case, if you have one IP address more, it's recommended that you do that, because then adding a single node is just a matter of a GNT node add. Later on, you can add all your nodes, and then you can basically run commands. This command basically lets you install this instance operating system, which is called Ganeti Instance Etch, and with which we will do the show today. Basically, what it does is it installs an Etch system using the Bootstrap. The one we're using now actually installs a static image, because I didn't want to be dependent on the network. After you've done this, you can start using your cluster. So you can do a GNT instance add. And that way, actually there's, a, no, it's fine. So that way, GNT instance add, you choose the primary node, column secondary node, you choose the disk type. In this case, we're using DRBD8, which is the newest one. We have other types, and we're going to see what they are. And you give an instance name. Again, the instance must be in DNS. And you can pass a lot of parameters like disk size, swap size, whether you want Ganeti to store an IP address for the instance or not, if you want to connect to the instance to a different bridge or other things. But basically, if you don't want to pass those, this is just what you need. Then a node crashes, for example, you can fail over the instance. So you use the ignore consistency because you don't have all your nodes up. And in this case, you're basically going to discard this node at some point. But in general, if the node is up, you don't need to use ignore consistency. And you can use this failover command to move the instance to another node. Then what you can do, note that failover doesn't take a secondary node. That is because failover can only move the instance to the node which is already declared as secondary. So in the case of the instance 0 we have up there, it's node 1. We can only move instance 0, which is running on node 2, to node 1. Then what we can do is do a replace disks. So after the failover, the primary is become secondary and vice versa. We run replace disks, and we can declare a new secondary, which will mean that the DRBD device is going to be teared down, and it's going to be broken up, brought up on another node and connected again. So after this, you have your instance, which is in a newly highly available state after a node failure. Of course, if all your nodes fail and you lose data on both nodes on which the instance was, you're kind of out of luck. Let's see what else we can do. This is how do we get the cluster status. So we can have a GNT instance list, which tells us what instances are running, which OS do they have, the primary node, and some other information. This is the default information. You can actually query it with a long different list of parameters, and you can choose which fields you want to see at each time. GNT node list instead is going to give you statistics on the node. If you don't know which node you want to allocate a virtual machine to, you might want to check, let's look. One node has less free memory, the others have more, so let's allocate on one of the first two nodes which have more free resources. Basically, what we noticed is that the major constraint for us is memory. The machine memory size is going to constrain the number of machines we can run on those. So that's what we care more about. So let's see how this instance failover is done a bit more in detail. What happens is that, first of all, you have your machine running normally, as we've seen before, on system 1 and with this DRBD that rates the data to system 2. Then you issue a failover command, or actually system 1 fails. So the virtual machine goes down too. We cannot, of course, afford to run the virtual machines on both nodes coherently or things like that. So if the hardware fails, virtual machine one is gone. But your data is still there, and it's basically not so bad. I mean, it's in the same state you would have it if you had an hardware crash, but you haven't lost the data, which might be gone from node one, from system one anyway. So you do a primary failover, as we've seen before, and now the machine is actually running again. It's running on system two, but it declares some broken DRBD device, which points to a system which is not there anymore. This is unfortunate. So what you're doing is a secondary failover we've seen before. So you're basically saying, please construct a new partition there and reconstruct its data starting from system two. And so now your system is available again because it has two nodes, data on two nodes, and it's running. Let's talk about the disk types Ganeti provides. So you can run Ganeti plain instances, which means they have no reliability, no high availability, basically. You just run on an LVM node on one instance. If that node fails, the instance is not there anymore. If you want to remove the node from the cluster, you have to destroy the instance. It's not very good unless you want to experiment or you just have a one-node cluster and you want to get rid of all the DRBD stuff which you don't need anyway. Local RAID 1 is a bit better. What lets you do is, look, I have a machine. It has more than one disk on it. And I have all the disks part of my LVM device. So what I'm going to do is create two partitions, which Ganeti is going by itself to put on two different disks because you don't want to lose one disk and lose your instance. And then create a Linux MD device on top of those and run the instance on top of this. This means that if you lose all your nodes, your motherboard goes bad or something like that, you're out of luck, the machine is down. But on the other hand, if you just lose one disk, the machine is still up. This is no better, of course, than a normal mirroring, but what we figured is that maybe you don't have hardware RAID support, maybe you're using it on an old platform. In general, we want this not to be dependent on particular hardware. So this way we can do it even with a normal PC with no need of special RAID hardware or things like that. Then there's the remote RAID 1, of which you see an expansion there. The remote RAID 1 template is based on DRBD 0.7, which is the previous version of DRBD. It's the one we are using in production at Google, and when I mean production, I still mean corporate services, not prod Google Chrome services. So it's the one you're using in production at Google, and basically it has an MD device on top of the DRBD device. This seems a bit of a waste because the MD device is there and doesn't do any mirroring. It's a RAID 1 degraded device, basically. What it's used for is this. DRBD 0.7 doesn't have a way to change the DRBD mirroring without tearing down the instance, the disk. So what happens is that that DRBD device you see is up, and it can actually, if node 2 fails, you can just switch off the DRBD device, switch it on again with another node, and it's going to do the mirroring. This was not okay for us because we did want to do this without turning off the instance. So we have an instance running on top of this, and the DRBD device needs to be up when we do a secondary failover. We can't avoid being down for primary, but we don't want to be down if just a secondary node fails and we need to fail over the instance while we rebuild or something like that, or even to do a reboot of the instance just for that. So what we do is we put an MD device on top of this, and then what we are going to do is create a new DRBD device, which actually is going to redo the mirror completely. And we'll see how it works in a short time. But before, let's see that DRBD8, which is the new version of DRBD, just declared stable, I think, a few months ago, I don't remember, has already this feature of changing what nodes are part of a DRBD setup without tearing down the DRBD itself. So what we're going to do is replace remote RAID 1 with DRBD8, and we've already done it in version 1.2, but for now we are using both. Like, we have code to support both in case there's something going wrong with the RBD8 or something, we're still in beta and we're still deciding what we're going to do. Anyway, nowadays we have the RBD8, and the RBD8 basically has the same setup except it gets rid of this SMD device and makes things a lot faster and easier. And we'll see why. So let's see now, how do we do an instance failover from the point of view of the disks? First of all, you have your instance disk, which is based on top of MD device, which is based on top of the RBD device, which actually does the mirroring across two nodes, as we were discussing. On the two nodes, each device which is part of a mirroring is an LVM partition. So then, node 2 fails. This time it's just a secondary failover. So your instance is still up, but it's not redundant anymore. What you do is you do a secondary failover, and so then the MD device comes along, and a new DRBD device is created, a new LVM logical volume is created, and unfortunately, due to this situation we had, we need to create the LVM volume both on the current node and on the remote node. And then at this point, MD is going to copy the data from the current node to the DRBD device, which is going to put it in the logical volume on the current node, so in a new logical volume on the current node, and on the remote node. This makes things a bit slower for the instance, because right now, the I/O of the node is maybe a lot busier copying data from one local disk to the other, even if the data on the local disk is still fine. And that's why DRBD8 solves this issue. So then, now the copy is finished. We tear down the DRBD node, we remove the device from the MD, and what happens is that you don't depend anymore on node 2, and you have exactly the same structure you had before on the other side, so on two different nodes. One which is the node you were before, and the other one which is a completely new node. We also have at this point to delete the data on node 1, which is copied twice, and this was a waste. So, we've seen that DRBD8 avoids us doing all that copy and gives us a better solution. We also have optional advanced features. I decided to put them apart because I didn't want to basically scare anybody with the complexity we might want. It's basically, you don't need to use these features, but if you want them, they're here. So, the first one is the separated application network. Many machines we have today come with two network cards and not just one. So let's use one. Let's put all the replication traffic on a different network. The instances are not going to see it, they can't interfere with it, and they have the full bandwidth of one Ethernet and one switch for replication. This is the way we're running it in production. You can run it without the replication network if you don't want to use a switch more or you don't have enough ports on your only switch. There's no need to do this. You can run machines on multiple bridges. So what happens is that normally you just connect the machines to one bridge which is connected to the node ATH0, and all the machines and the nodes share the same network. We might have situations in which this is not appropriate. We might, first of all, not want the nodes and the machines to talk to each other, or the machines to talk to the nodes and do stuff with them. We might not want the machines to talk to each other based on policies. We might have green machines which have some purpose and magenta machines which have a different purpose. So what we do is we just create different bridges on the node and we can connect them to different VLANs and do trunking between the switch and the machines if you have trunking support. If you don't, you can do something different. You could connect your bridges to some interfaces which are use IP over IP tunnels or other solutions to bring your traffic out. So, and then there is instance tagging, which is a new feature in beta 2, and it just lets you like make easier to manage groups of instances. You say, I don't know, I want to have some group of instances and I want to be sure of where they are, what they're doing, so I'll tag them magenta. And then all of a sudden you can search for magenta instances, search for their status, see that they are applying a special policy or something. This is just initial support. We don't have things like all the machines tagged like this must be connected to some bridge or things like that. But it's a way for you to recognize a set of resources, which can be machines, nodes, or other resources. So here is how we use Gannett in Google. We basically mostly have this 20 machine racks, which can be Dell servers, but can be whatever kind of hardware you have available. We have a switch, or we can run it with two switches, or in fully redundant mode if we have four Ethernet interfaces using bonding or things like that, but that's not something about Gannett. It's basically a configuration on the box itself. And we prefer to use 64-bit nodes because they let us manage more RAM in an easier way. And so basically they're cheaper in the end because we can run more machines with more RAM. As we said, RAM is our major bottleneck. We have hundreds of instances on the box, on the cluster. And it's used for Google.com, not for Google.com services, but for corporate services like internal machines, which we use to serve enterprise needs. It's best, of course, if you have a lot of non-resource intensive systems which are separated just for like purposes like security or things like that. But it's also used for some computationally intensive resource. Of course, then you might want to run less machines per node, but still you have the option of high availability and things like that. So we developed the code at Google. We licensed it under the GPL v2 or later, and for now we're sticking with v2. You can download the code from codegoogle.com/p/Gannett, and it's been released as open source beta 1 in August. We just released open source beta 2, which has a lot of bug fixes, a lot of new features, like the RBD8 instance tagging and things like that. And it's basically, it should be a lot better. It's also easier for distribution maintainers to package. So we should be able now to ship this version or some later version to Debian and to Ubuntu and to Linux distributions. We plan to release 1.2 as stable this year, probably December, since November is almost gone. And we plan to have a series of point releases, which we'll see about later, and then have a 1.3 release later next year, probably. So what's the roadmap for 1.2? We have all these new features in 1.2 beta 2. We changed the cluster configuration format from beta 1, so if you were running beta 1, you need to do some to use some conversion tool. We have a new disk template. We have a lot of common tasks simplified and unified in one simple command. We now have more automatic availability, like versus Gannett Watcher daemon, which controls that your cluster is in a consistent status, that all the machines which you wanted to be running are running and things like that. Now from beta 2, it also repairs broken DRBD devices. So if one node goes down for a while, then it comes back up and it's fine, Gannett Watcher is going to rebuild the DRBD which was interrupted. It makes it easier to package, as we said, and it has tags. What we are going to do for the rest of 1.2 is we're going to probably not add any new feature and just clean up, do bug fixes, answer to problems people find, and then release 1.2 as stable. After that, we want to add new features in point releases, but just features that don't affect the code core code. Here I'm writing as an example that we want to evaluate inserting XenHVM and KVM support for virtualization. This is possible because since we have a layer, which is the hypervisor layer, we can just declare a new KVM hypervisor class, and if KVM meets all the requirements and we can do it easily, we can release a point release which has KVM support without changing the core code and without disrupting functionality for people using it with already working Xen mode. But we don't want to, in 1.2, add any functionality that touches the core code too much or breaks or may break things. Then we have a draft roadmap for version 1.3. For version 1.3, what we want is an external API. What's the external API about? Basically, you have a way to interrogate the Ganeti cluster from outside with some kind of API, which is probably going to be web-based in some way. So you will authenticate to the cluster, and then you can issue commands like install me a machine, remove this machine, or things like that. All the Ganeti commands should be provided by the external API. What is going to be is that this external API is planned in order for us to have some external meta cluster manager, which lets us, for example, have like many clusters in one room or one data center, and say, please allocate a machine, and the meta cluster manager can do some interrogation, see which cluster is more free, and send the machine to the right cluster. We want to have in 1.3, if possible, transparent failover, which will mean, I mean, on top of DRBD8, it shouldn't be too hard. We just need to run, to change the DRBD device to be master-master rather than master-slave as we configure it now. Then dynamically move the machines, making sure that the name of the device the machine sees are the same on both nodes, and then reswitch it to master-slave, which is more efficient and doesn't allow people to break things if, for any reason, they mount the instance on the slave and they start writing things to the disk, which is, of course, not possible unless you're running a cluster file system on top of it. We want to have more granular locking. As with any open source project, probably we have a big Ganeti lock, which is every time you run a Ganeti command, it grabs a lock and it keeps it for the whole time a command runs. Some commands take a bit of time. We have made sure that there are ways to skip lengthy operations, like not to wait for lengthy operations, but still there might be commands which take time and we don't want to hold the lock if it's not necessary, so we plan to do at least some more granularity in the locking. We want to do job queuing. It's nowadays you have to install an instance, wait till it finishes, then install another one, or run a script and if something fails, you have to check in the script logs or things like that. We want to have job queuing inside Ganeti, so you might be able to say, okay, please allocate me 10 instances and then do a backup, and it will execute all the operations in the order they were scheduled, or it might have a way to, for example, say, this operation is urgent, please do it as soon as you can, or things like that. In general, we want to support more diversity between instances. Now we can have more than one operating system, but each instance has one network interface, each instance has one disk, each instance has one swap, and that's all. We want to be able to have more disk per instances, more network interfaces, in general, like to support different needs. And if you have ideas of what needs might be useful, you should probably speak up and tell us something, post to the mailing list or come to the Ganeti Bof tonight, in which I'd like people to speak up and talk about Ganeti, what they think, if they have proposals, ideas, or things like that. And then we want to have stable support for different virtualization technologies, even at the same time. So you might want to run some instances which use Xen with HVM, some instances which use Xen paravirtualized. There's no reason you shouldn't be able to do this. Right now in 1.2, we don't plan to add this because this would, as I said before, intact the core code and change things for people already running Ganeti. So we will add experimental support or maybe semi-stable support for virtualization instances, but 1.3 is where we want to have more than one. And of course, this is just a draft roadmap. We just came out with it in the last few weeks, and it might still change before 1.3 is released. The future. There are things which we've been talking a lot, but we've never had time to implement. Maybe they will be in 1.3, maybe they won't. Things like the automatic instance failover. Right now, if a node fails, the instance has to manually be brought up. This is not a big issue for us, just someone gets paged versus short response time and the instance gets failed over, but there might be situations in which you want to just fail over the instance without taking care of it. We want to have automatic node allocations. Nowadays, as you've seen, you need to say, please put this instance on this node and use this node as a secondary. We want Ganeti to be able to decide on what node to put the instance and just put it there. We want the master node to be automatically chosen and to fail over automatically. And then we want this MetaCluster manager we were talking about and remote instance interface, which needs the remote API, which it's almost definitely going in 1.3, but we don't know if this will be ready in time for 1.3, or maybe we're going to release it later. Or we'll have to see. So now we're going to try Ganetti Live. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know how it's going to be. We'll see. As usual in like live presentations, probably something is going to break, so let's see what. And then we'll have some time for questions. Thank you very much for your attention for now.